and all the Masterforce outdoor power equipment you need to maintain your yard at Menards. Own the outdoors with Masterforce 80-volt power equipment, delivering all the power of gas without the maintenance. The entire 80-volt line is powered by brushless motors for ultimate performance and productivity. From lawnmowers to leaf blowers, string trimmers, and more, find everything you need to create the lawn of your dreams with Masterforce power equipment at Menards. Save big money
at Menards. This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
GX on Agriculture with Doug Falconer.
Good afternoon and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on today's program, the National Tri-National Agricultural Accord wrapped up yesterday, and Manitoba Agriculture Minister Blaine Peterson led the Canadian delegation. We'll hear from him on how it went regarding the successful implementation of the United States-Mexico-Canada trade agreement. As well, the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture says the area seeded to winter wheat and fall rye is below normal in most areas. We'll catch up with that topic with Sarah Tetlin today. Soil salinity affects up to 2.5 million acres of land in Western Canada, with another 19 million acres at a moderate to high risk of salinization. We'll speak with Brianna Lummerding with Nutrien Ag Solutions. She's a manager of agronomy in North Central Saskatchewan, and she was out at the Langham Discovery Farm Research Site recently. We'll have an interview with her. And, of course, 2020 has been a challenging year for mental health, and we'll speak with Do More Ag Foundation Executive Director Adele Stewart about that. So all that and more coming up on today's edition of GX in Agriculture. But first, it's time for the Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather. And that's a presentation of Sean Prahitka, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
With Phil Spivak from Precision Weather, Phil, it's overcast here once again today. The odd flurry floating around. Can we expect any more of that today?
Yeah, and I say it in that tone because there will be flurries, not only today, tonight, tomorrow night, Sunday, but it's not going to amount to much. Overall, it's just cloudy. There will be some breaks of sun from time to time, but that nuisance flurry or two flying in the air, we'll see a few more of those this afternoon. There's just a lot of upper-level energy rotating around. We're sitting right in the middle of a trough, and in fact, the axis of that trough is going to be very slowly shifting eastward, watching it out to about 2 to 3 days before it really shows any significant movement. And right in the middle of that trough is where we are, and that's why we're going to be dealing with quite a bit of cloud cover. The pattern overall is very stagnant. There is a cold front which is dropping through into the central Great Lakes this afternoon. That's where the primary energy with it is. It's moving very slowly. Warm air is getting squeezed into the eastern U.S. ahead of it. Cool air filtering southward through the central U.S. And then there's another front out to the west that started to lift through British Columbia toward Alberta. And this is all just moving slowly. There's a ridge of high pressure at the surface that's blocking it. This upper-level trough is blocking everything. So while that front meanders slowly through the U.S., the high that's here is stuck. And that's what's jammed up this upper-level trough. That's jamming up that other front. And with all this not moving, we're just stuck in this pattern. The problem is it's a cold pattern, and that's why we're not likely to get back to freezing for the next few days. Minus 4 this afternoon. Pretty much there, holding mostly steady through the afternoon. The wind averaging around 15 to 20, maybe as high as 25 at times. Tonight, partly to mostly cloudy, the odd flurry or two, mainly in the evening, 13 on the negative side. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, minus 5. Sunday, mostly cloudy, minus 4. Best chance for flurries is actually Saturday night, as that trough axis shifts just a little bit. But still, nuisance flurries. Minus 4 on Sunday, and then Monday will brighten up a little bit. Partly sunny sky with a high near minus 1. And that's because that trough axis finally shifts. That allows the coldest air to shift. That allows that front to the west to shift. And that's what's got the warmer air, that'll start to sort of filter in. So we'll back up to close to freezing on Monday, partly sunny near minus one. With that system, though, moving once again, there will be another one that drops in over the top of it for Tuesday, bringing a chance for some light snow. Temperature on the positive side, likely, though, still just a wet snow that falls, the high near one.
That's Phil Spivak from Precision Weather. Temperatures around the region this hour, the Paw is at minus 3 degrees, Swan River, Dauphin, and Brandon, minus 4, Show Lake Russell, minus 7, Roblin, minus 6. Regina, Saskatoon, and Hudson Bay are at minus 4, Broadview, Mooseman, minus 6, Indian Head, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, minus 5. The Yorkton-Melville region has a cloudy sky, a northwest wind at 18, gusting to 28 kilometers an hour. 72% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 5 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 11 degrees. Yesterday, Yorkton reached a high of minus 2 degrees and dropped to a low of minus 14 degrees. There was no precipitation recorded in the 24-hour period ending at midnight last night. The normal high for this date is plus 6, the normal low minus 4. The sun rose in Yorkton at 7:28 this morning, and it will set at 5:41 this afternoon. Extreme temperatures for Manitoba and Saskatchewan yesterday. The Manitoba hotspot was a tie between Fisher Branch and Kleefeld. They both got up to plus 3 degrees. The cold spot was Roblin at minus 16 degrees. The Saskatchewan hotspot yesterday was LaRonge at minus 1 degree. The cold spot Valmarie at minus 21 degrees. And that's a look at your agriculture weather. Please stay tuned. GX and Agriculture will return in 1 minute's time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. It's 12:23 in Saskatchewan, 1:23 in Manitoba. Members of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture in the United States and their state and provincial counterparts from Mexico and Canada have issued a joint communique underscoring the role of states and provinces in successful implementation of the United States-Mexico-Canada Trade Agreement. North American state and provincial agricultural officials gathered virtually this week for the 29th annual Tri-National Agricultural Accord. Manitoba Agriculture Minister Blaine Peterson led the Canadian delegation.
For those of you who are aware, Manitoba hosted this Tri-National last year, so we built up some great relationships there, and these continue here too. And you know, over the last number of years, the Tri-National, there's been lots of talk of as USMCA, or CUSMA as we call it in Canada, was in the process of being negotiated. Now it's actually been signed as of July. So, and it really shows the provincial and state involvement in getting this agreement and how it affects agriculture positively. And one of the other things we had a really great discussion on was African swine fever, and it affects all three of our countries. And it was really amazing to see the close connection between all three countries, our lead veterinarians and researchers working together on a North American-wide strategy to mitigate the hopefully keep the African swine fever out of North America, but also should it come, to work together to mitigate the impacts. That's just a couple of the things.
Peterson was asked about the fair enforcement of the new trade deal.
The committee work, the committee structure that's been set up, and it'll be able to allow us going forward to deal with many of the issues we've had on an ongoing basis. It certainly opens it up to be able to have that state and provincial involvement in what are considered to be national issues.
Peterson then described what he sees as unique challenges to agriculture due to COVID-19.
I think the important thing to realize with COVID, and as it continues on too, is that there were strains on the food system, on the food delivery system, on the entire food chain in some of our packing plants. But the system never broke down. We didn't run out of food. The food continued to be available, and it brought an awareness of consumers of where their food actually comes from. And so what we want to do is build on this going forward too, is that not let an good opportunity go to waste here, and that we can continue to improve our food delivery system and build on that awareness, because that consumer awareness for where your food comes from is so important. And let's continue to build on that based on our COVID experiences here.
Peterson was also asked if American farm subsidies were discussed.
We spent our time talking about market access and about trade barriers, and not necessarily just trade barriers across North America, but we did speak about what's happening in Europe and other countries who are using non-scientific barriers to trade, and we feel that that's together, we feel that North America is very strong together, and we need to be able to have that access around the world, and we need to use our strength as three trading partners in order to build that market access around the world.
Peterson was then asked if any ideas were shared about how to support one another's agriculture industries related to the pandemic.
One of the highlights that came out, and it was no surprise to any of us, is the rural internet access. Farms are very technical nowadays, and they can use that internet access, and that's one of the things that we need to work on here in Manitoba and across Canada. I know we've been working with the federal government to find out investment dollars that we need in order to get rural connectivity. The other one that, and that's been mentioned too, is the research and innovation. We know that our farm community here in Canada, I know in the U.S., Mexico, our farmers are very tech savvy, and that's how they're going to be profitable going forward in the future, is to be able to tap into that research and innovation. And with a forum like the Tri-National, we can, one of the topics was brought up was to make sure that technology that's available, whether it's in the U.S. or Mexico, is also available to our Canadian farmers too. And it's through forums like this Tri-National that we can work to make sure that research and innovation is uniform across the three countries, and also that we can push to make sure that we don't see those non-tariff barriers coming up, non-scientific barriers coming up from our trading partners around the world. And when we are strong here in terms of our research and innovation, our science-based production, then we have a much stronger case going forward as the three of us together.
That's Manitoba Agriculture Minister Blaine Peterson. The United States will host the 30th annual Tri-National Accord in Arlington, Virginia, next October. It's now nearly 12:30 in Saskatchewan, 1:30 in Manitoba, and it's time for the AgriView portion of our program. That's a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
GX94, AgriView.
Jolene Shea has been elected to the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association Board of Directors for District 7 to replace outgoing board member Paula Larson. William Coventry was also running for the board position. The election took place at the Kerrobert Community Center on Tuesday. The Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association Board is made up of members from each of Saskatchewan's 9 crop districts and is the provincial checkoff agency for Saskatchewan beef producers. Due to COVID-19, the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association will be holding their district fall meetings as one virtual meeting on October 28th at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. The Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association annual general meeting, which will also be virtual, will be held on February 1st at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. The union for over 1,000 workers at a major Quebec hog slaughter plant is calling on the owners to temporarily close the facility against a COVID-19 outbreak now blamed for the death of an employee. The union says the death of a worker earlier this week led it to demand that the company shut the Olymel plant at Valley Junction, about 60 kilometers south of Quebec City, for at least 2 weeks. Quebec media on Wednesday quoted union officials as saying a 65-year-old employee had been off work since Friday last week with symptoms, was confirmed positive Tuesday for COVID-19, and died just hours later. Local union president Martin Maurice, who was quoted in local media Wednesday as saying up to 80 Valley Junction workers have tested positive for the coronavirus, said in a release that the union had called for protective measures for workers since the first wave of the COVID-19 pandemic began. However, he said the union this summer had to call again on the company, the meatpacking arm of Quebec Ag Cooperative Solio, over its relaxation of certain sanitary measures put in place to prevent an outbreak. The company had resumed overtime and canceled a 10-minute buffer period between shifts. Also, Maurice says a number of subcontractors now work at the plant, and added it's not known whether those workers are following protective measures regarding moving from one work site to another. Schooler Company has set up a new delivery point for southwestern Ontario growers from whom it buys grain. The Omaha-based privately held grain firm announced yesterday it has made a deal with Martin Farming, which operates at Paris, just northwest of Brantford, that will direct grain for Martin's new 22,000 metric ton capacity elevator. The agreement allows Schooler to buy directly from Ontario producers and Martin Farming to store and handle the grain. Schooler's direct presence in Canada is so far mainly in the west, with processing plants and elevators in Manitoba and Saskatchewan, plus offices in Saskatoon and Calgary, from which it deals in Canadian pulses, flax, sunflowers, wheat, canola, barley, corn, and soybeans. The 128-year-old U.S. company made its first major move into the Canadian market just in 2015 when it bought the special crops division of Winnipeg-based Legumex Walker. New rules to guarantee the authenticity and origin of traditional British foods such as Stilton cheese and Melton Mowbray pork pies after the end of the UK's Brexit transition period were set out by the government yesterday. Britain left the European Union at the end of January, and an 11-month transition period ends on December 31st. It's not yet clear what sort of relationship Britain and the EU will have from next January, with the two sides due to resume trade talks. At the end of the transition period, the new and independent geographical indications schemes will ensure popular and traditional produce from across Britain will be granted special status to mark out their authenticity and origin. Products such as Scotch whiskey, Welsh lamb, and Cornish clotted cream will also be covered by the schemes. And that's the AgriView portion of our program. Please stay tuned. GX and Agriculture will return in 1 minute's time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. It's cloudy and minus 5 degrees in the Yorkton-Melville region. I'll have your complete weather details coming up at the top of the hour. The Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture says the area seeded to winter wheat and fall rye is below normal in most areas. Provincial Crops Extension Specialist Sarah Tetland says farmers are concerned about improper germination due to the very dry conditions.
So overall, throughout the province, due to those dry conditions, the acres seeded to winter wheat and fall rye is below average. There was adequate time for seeding this fall with how well harvest went, but farmers were concerned with those dry conditions that the crops wouldn't actually germinate and establish well enough for winter. So overall, acres for those winter cereals are down, aside from some areas where they did receive adequate moisture, particularly in the northern regions. They are reporting more kind of around that average amount of acres seeded to those winter cereals.
Any idea how much it's down?
I'm not for sure on number-wise, that was kind of a comment that a lot of our reporters gave, that just because it was quite dry, they haven't been seeing as much, and in some cases haven't really been seeing any acres in their specific area. But I don't have numbers for acres for you.
How were hay yields this year?
So hay yields have been fairly average this year, but again, similar to crop yields, it really did depend on those moisture conditions received throughout the summer. So it has been quite dry, so particularly parts of the southern regions have noted below average hay yields. But when we look at the numbers for hay yields on dry land, they have been reported as 1.2 tons per acre for alfalfa, 1.1 tons per acre for alfalfa brome and for wild hay, 1 ton per acre for other tame hay, and 1.9 tons per acre for green feed. And then when we look at the irrigated land hay yields, they're being estimated as 2.1 tons per acre for alfalfa, 2.3 tons per acre for alfalfa brome, 2 tons per acre for wild hay, and 4.2 tons per acre for green feed.
How are winter feed supplies looking?
So overall, livestock farmers are saying that they think they have adequate feed supplies for this winter, but similarly to kind of how the yields have been coming off, farmers in those drier areas have noted reduced hay production and straw production, so there is expected to be kind of inadequate feed supplies in those areas, and there may be some shortages in those areas, so that is more so in parts of the southern and central regions of the province.
Sarah Tetlin compiles the crop report for the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture. It's now 12:39 in Saskatchewan, 1:39 in Manitoba.
Livestock market conditions.
U.S. live cattle futures for December closed at 103.57 today. That's up 10. February live cattle closed at 106.62. Down 15. November feeder cattle closed at 129.65, down 77. January feeder cattle closed at 125.55, down 65. December lean hogs closed at 67.02, that's up 82. February lean hogs closed at 66.92, up 7. And that's the livestock market conditions. Soil salinity affects up to 2.5 million acres of land in Western Canada, with another 19 million acres at a moderate to high risk of salinization. A research project at the Discovery Farm west of Langham is working to find out which forage species or species mix can have the most positive impact on higher salinity soil. The study is being sponsored by Nutrien Ag Solutions, Proven Seeds, and Ducks Unlimited. We spoke to Brianna Lummerding, Nutrien Ag Solutions Manager of Agronomy in North Central Saskatchewan, at the research site on Wednesday.
We've identified a corner of the field that's been saline for a long time, and instead of putting an annual crop, we have put in saline-tolerant forages in a 180-foot by 160-foot area. We have chosen to do three types of salt-tolerant forages. We're doing a AC Saltlander, a Saline Master Blend, and a Halo Alfalfa. So these types of salt-tolerant forages that we've selected have been bred to be able to handle higher salt levels in the soil. So AC Saltlander is your most salt-tolerant wheatgrass on the market. It generally can do pretty well without competing weeds like foxtail barley that are generally present in those saline areas. We also chose Saline Master, which has a 40% blend of your AC Saltlander with some other salt-tolerant grasses as well. And then we also wanted to try a Halo Alfalfa, which is one of the most salt-tolerant alfalfas on the market. And what we're trying to do here is seeing how these different forages establish and take, as well as how many cuts we get and how well they handle a saline corner of a field. And our intentions here are, because an annual crop generally isn't going to perform well under these saline conditions, it is in our best interest to be planting a forage crop here and dealing with the water levels and the salinity that way, because we're going to get a lot more value in getting cuts for feed here in this area over trying to get a cash annual crop to establish and to get a return that way.
There's about 100 feet separating the high saline area from the low saline area at the research site near Langham. Is that uncommon?
So no, salinity can vary greatly in a small area. So even in 100 feet, you can have a EC measured of 3.5 and go 100 feet in either direction and only be at a 0.5. So you can be non-saline in a saline area as well as very saline. So that is the importance in when you have saline areas to be sampling in more than one area in that saline area, as well as multiple depths, as that salinity through moisture can travel down and up and down that soil profile. So being at a 0 to 6 in that rooting zone is a good start, but also wanting to monitor lower depths as well. So trying to get a 6 to 12 and a 12 to 18 to see where that's, the salts are fluctuating in that soil profile.
How are you handling weed control at the site?
Yeah, so what we're doing here is instead of spraying out for weeds, we are trying to get a handle on the weeds by mowing. The reason for this is with salinity, you want to keep it covered, so we don't want to spray, have that ground be black. The weeds themselves are providing us a purpose. They are sucking up some of that salt water, especially kochia and foxtail barley. So instead of spraying those out and having black soil, we're letting them grow and we're mowing. Now we're doing multiple heights for cuts. We did a 2-inch and a 6-inch. This purpose is to see how different heights may affect weed control as well as snow catch in the winter and overall establishment.
Have you learned anything after year one?
The biggest thing we've seen so far is we, under kind of maybe some non-ideal moisture conditions, we were able to get a catch of the forages, which is really exciting. So now it's being patient and waiting and seeing what the next few years brings.
And what happens next year?
So we're going to continue with mowing as the weed control and just allowing those forages to establish. And this is, you know, generally a 3 to 5 year project. And as I stated before, these soils that we're working on have been saline for a very long time. So we're not trying to change the soils. We're just trying to better manage and farm on the soils as they are.
Brianna Lummerding is Nutrien Ag Solutions Manager of Agronomy in North Central Saskatchewan. She's the lead in the soil salinity project at the Glacier Farm Media Discovery Farm near Langham. It's now 12:45 in Saskatchewan, 1:45 in Manitoba. Please stay tuned. GXN Agriculture will return right after these messages.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we're a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a customer becomes family.
Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Falconer. It's 12:46 in Saskatchewan, 1:46 in Manitoba. Grain and oilseed markets continued an upward price trend this week. Commodity futures advisor with PI Financial in Regina, Adam Puccolo, says spring wheat was up 15 cents a bushel and canola gained $15 a metric ton.
Starting off on the canola side of the market, we definitely did see the futures rally again here this week, increasing about $15 a ton on the January futures. So the November contract is going to expire soon, and the January will be the one now quoted. So that's the one that I've been, again, more, I would say, talking with clients about. And then on the Minneapolis wheat side, again, another quite strong week when it comes to wheat. The week ended up so far on the day about 15 cents a bushel on the December contract, and it has backed off in the last couple days from the highs of the week. However, as I've mentioned, both canola and wheat, the trend is still quite positive here.
What are the factors pushing up the wheat and canola markets?
Well, when it comes, traders really are seeing kind of the news of the pandemic spreading rapidly as a reason for some countries actually hoarding wheat. So that could be kind of one factor on that side. There is dry weather in the U.S. and the Black Sea region also hurting crops. Nations might maybe seem to be buying before kind of prices rise further here. So that's kind of one thing. And as well, too, the funds, again, are definitely on the long side of the market here. And that's when managed money starts to buy commodities, we start to see these rallies happen. So I would say some fundamentals are positive. The technicals now are. So that's, I've been kind of going over with clients strategies to be maybe kind of replacing some wheat they've sold and, you know, when we should maybe be protecting for next year's crop.
Any idea how long this rally will last?
That's the million-dollar question. Nobody has that crystal ball, and that's where the best thing I can kind of tell clients right now is that there is no sign of a peak. The markets remain positive here. When it comes to kind of the canola side of the market, I've been watching for signals on the soy complex, beans, the oil and meal for some type of indication they might be declining. However, that's not the case. So all factors are quite positive for canola, I would say, except for maybe the Canadian dollar. This week here, the Canadian dollar did kind of increase a little bit here. But overall, it seems that the currency side hasn't been a huge factor.
And what's the market outlook for next week and beyond?
Well, next week we'll see if canola does keep pushing to kind of new contract highs. There might be some type of consolidation here before it does leg higher. But again, there's a lot of different factors to be watching, and that's what I try and keep clients aware of.
Adam Puccolo is a commodity futures advisor with PI Financial in Regina. It's now 12:50 in Saskatchewan, 1:50 in Manitoba.
Commodities update.
Canola futures closed up for the most part today. November canola closed at $550 per metric ton. That's up $4.40. January canola closed at $551 per metric ton, up $4.10. December Minneapolis wheat closed at $577.50, up 3 cents. December Kansas City wheat closed at $569.75, up 9.5 cents. December Chicago wheat closed at $632.75, up 10 cents. December corn closed at $419.25, up 3 cents. November soybeans closed at $10.83.75, up 10 cents. December oats closed at $3.03.5, unchanged from yesterday's close. And that's the commodities update. 2020 has been a challenging year for mental health. COVID-19 social distancing, event cancellations, and for some job losses have placed additional stress on Canadians. Stress is a daily occurrence on the farm, but this year's early harvest, decent-sized crop, and improving prices have helped to ease some anxiety. The Do More Ag Foundation was established in January of 2018 to promote mental health awareness in agriculture. Since that time, more than 1,000 people have participated in mental health training sessions geared to those in the agriculture sector. Most farmers did not have many issues with COVID, but there were a few exceptions. Those that employ temporary foreign workers, such as beekeepers, horticulture operations, and large grain farms, did experience issues meeting and paying for the additional health measures. However, Do More Ag Foundation Executive Director Adele Stewart says most farms have been able to deal with the changes.
Yeah, it's been really different and varied, as the stressors in ag always are, so it really depends who you ask. But, you know, for one, farmers are used to isolation. So, you know, that was not as much of a culture shock for us. But, you know, what really some farmers and producers that we talked to, they had more hands on deck. And they had, you know, kids that were home from university that wasn't giving live classes and things like that, or people home from the city that their jobs were temporarily paused or whatever. So seeding, you know, might have gone even faster because they were quicker on the repairs and had more bodies in the seats of the tractors. So that was, you know, one side of the story. But, you know, other sides of industry, beekeeping, horticulture, and whatnot who rely on foreign workers, they were very severely impacted. So it was very varied, but depending who you ask. So the experience has been very wide. But I do think that going into winter, when we are so used to our conferences, our trade shows, agribition, all of those things that we look for, to kind of charge us up, because we do get lonely after that isolation. We're not this winter going to be having that opportunity. So there are struggles yet to come for producers for sure.
So farmers may experience more of these issues during the winter when they have some downtime.
Yeah, absolutely. So we think with that, we're really hoping to get reach so many more communities this year is if we're able to work within provincial regulations for live, safe, classes, and then also offer virtual opportunities for the live ones as well. We're hoping that we can create some sense of community and education through this the winter, which I do think is going to be difficult.
The Do More Ag Foundation is now accepting applications for its training programs, and we'll have more details on that in 1 minute's time. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Doug Faulkner, and this will be the third year that the Do More Ag Foundation has offered mental health training for those in rural areas of Canada. The pilot year saw a two-day mental health first aid course, which received good reviews. However, included in the feedback was a request for a half-day workshop. Do More Ag Executive Director Adele Stewart says it's called Talk, Ask, Listen.
It focuses on signs and symptoms of mental illness, supporting somebody who might be struggling, as well as a big self-care and prevention strategy as well. So we began allowing communities to opt which program they wanted to take and added that one into year two. And then going into year three, we offered the half-day workshop both in person and virtually.
So who leads the two different types of workshops?
The two-day mental health first aid, we work with a national organization to work with their mental health first aid certified facilitators. And then with the Talk, Ask, Listen workshop, what we are doing is connecting with agriculture experienced mental health professionals, so mental health professionals who have lived ag experience, and bringing them on as partners of the foundation to facilitate and teach the Talk, Ask, Listen workshop. So it's developed by farmers, for farmers, delivered by producers.
So these workshops are developed from the grassroots up?
For sure, yeah. So we are here for the producer. Our role is to be the voice of the producer, to hear their feedback, and to develop and deliver programming and education and awareness that they are asking for. So one of the ways that this community fund and our training works so well is that we rely on who we call community leaders to apply to bring this training, whichever one they choose, to their rural center. So they would volunteer their time to do the organizing and the marketing. We support them with all the red tape things like the templates and the marketing outlines, and we're here to support them. But we find that, instead of us coming in and saying we're putting this on, we work with community leaders to say we're bringing in Do More Ag and this training. So people have a local face and a familiar face that helps. I think that really drives our attendance and whatnot, because it's someone locally standing up saying, hey, we're going to do this. And then the neighbors feel more comfortable coming.
And Do More Ag had some webinars 2 weeks ago. How did those go?
They were amazing. So we did the full half-day workshop, but we split it over 4 days into one-hour modules because people are busy and whatnot. So we had a couple hundred people log on every day, and then our recordings were available as well for 72 hours after that. We had another couple of hundred reviews of the recording. Feedback during the events and afterwards has been outstanding. So we look forward to continuing to take any feedback and improve that we can, but we're very happy how happy producers are with it so far.
Adele Stewart is the executive director of the Do More Agriculture Foundation. Applications are being accepted until the end of October for in-person or virtual mental health workshops. All of the information is available on the Do More Ag Foundation website. It's now 12:59 in Saskatchewan, 1:59 in Manitoba.
Farm Bulletin Board.
Just a reminder that this fall, farmers in southern Saskatchewan can safely dispose of unwanted agricultural pesticides and old obsolete livestock and equine medications through a Clean Farms cleanup program. It starts on Monday. The locations in our area: Carlisle on October 28th at Precision Ag, Indian Head on October 28th, that is, at Nutrien Ag Solutions, in Ituna on October 27th at Nutrien Ag Solutions, in Mooseman October 27th at Sharps Soil Services Limited, in Raymore on October 26th at Cargill, and in Whitewood at Richardson Pioneer on October 26th. And that's all the time we have for today's Farm Bulletin Board. It's now 1 o'clock in Saskatchewan, 2 o'clock in Manitoba. Time to check the GX94 precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, and Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, Russell regions tonight. Partly to mainly cloudy, winds west-northwest at 10 to 20, and a low of minus 13. For tomorrow, cloudy, winds west-northwest at 15 to 25, a high of minus 5. Sunday, mainly cloudy, winds west-northwest at 15 to 25, a high of minus 4. Monday, partly sunny, a high of minus 1. Tuesday, light snow, and a high of plus 1. In the Paw, it's minus 3 degrees, Swan River, Dauphin, and Brandon, minus 4. Show Lake Russell, minus 7, Roblin, minus 6. Regina, Saskatoon, and Hudson Bay, minus 4, Broadview, Mooseman, minus 6, Indian Head, Wynyard, Wadena, Kelvington, minus 5. The Yorkton-Melville region has a cloudy sky, a northwest wind at 18, gusting to 28 kilometers an hour. 72% is the relative humidity. The temperature is minus 5 degrees. With the wind chill, it feels more like minus 11 degrees. That's your agriculture weather, and that'll do it for GX on Agriculture for today. Be sure to tune in again on Monday at 12:15 Saskatchewan time for another edition of the program. It's time now for the news and sports headlines.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX94.